Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Josh Brown, it's okay. 2022 is saved because there's video games again.
Yay!
Only one of them, though. Don't get too carried away. We'll have to wait and see what else even happens across the summer because there's more press stuff to come. But Sniper Elite 5 came out this last week. Me and you played it for collectively about 20 minutes. But it's new, isn't it? It's a new thing.
It certainly is new. Is it good? I'm not sure.
No, I will preface everything that we're about to say by saying this is the wind-up. I'm Scott Tilford. You're Josh Brown.
Good morning, Scott Tilford.
Where we argue about all sorts of things or just step people up for the week, wind them up, you might say, for whatever's going to happen in the rest of the gaming week. And we're going to start with a breakdown of the things that we've been playing. Now, 2022 is a very empty year, which is why I keep celebrating the occasional new release that turns heads, even if it's not that brilliant once you actually dive into it. So, speaking of which, Sniper Elite 5. Now, I love Sniper Elite. I've been with it since the beginning. Loved Sniper Elite 4. I thought that was the best one. But they borrowed quite a lot from Phantom Pain. It was sort of had that sandbox feeling of just lots of way more gadgetry and way more playing with the AI and way more sort of setting up traps and everything else. And I just thought that considering how naff Sniper Elite 3 was, it was a major return to form and an elevation of what came before, which is to say that Sniper Elite 5 isn't scratching that same itch at all. They've kind of gone back to what the original ones were like, which were a lot more methodical, a lot more feeling like PC games coming across to consoles, and just not, as you know, it's. I imagine it's a major win for the people who loved like Sniper Elite 1 and V2, but for me, I liked how much 4 just went. Like, the 4 was the one I played the most of, other than, I guess, 2. But how did you find it? Because I think this was your first Sniper? Oh, no, first since 3.
First since 3, yeah. I've got, like, a lot of caveats for my take. So obviously take this with something of a pinch of salt because I've only played the opening hour and the last game I played was Sniper Elite 3, which I wasn't a fan of. That was a game that my friend brought over to my house and was like, look, Josh, you need to play this game.
Shoot these nads, Josh.
Yeah, you love stealth games. You love shooting people in the bollocks with X-ray vision. And I was like, hell yeah, this ticks all my boxes. And I couldn't get away with it. I found it a bit clunky. I found it, like you said, too methodical for my tastes. I didn't think that when you were forced to improvise, the improvisation felt good. And going across to this game, I really wanted to love it because I knew you were a big champion of 4. I love the Phantom Pain. Like I said, I love stealth games, and I was hoping for this to knock me away, and it just didn't, man. And that's partly because it's just like way clunkier than I wanted it to be. Right. I know this isn't like a game like Horizon or Uncharted or anything like that. It doesn't have that same level of production value, but still, while it was satisfying to score those X-ray kills, I found it somewhat lacking. But again, I'm really early on. It might get better. I thought graphically it looked really good. The presentation absolutely got me in. Like, just the animation of the guy holding the silenced pistol reminded me of Splinter Cell Conviction or even like an early Siphon Filter game, which I am totally, totally here for. But yeah, there was something in that hour that wasn't clicking with me.
No, I think it's the same thing. I mean, like, it's interesting because there is such a gap in the industry right now for a decent stealth game. I mean, like, even try and name any from the last few years, it's like a Plague Tale. There's hardly anything. Hitman, I guess. But but they're sort of like, you know, these big over the top levels as opposed to something a bit more character focused or ability focused like Splinter Cell. But the thing with this is, it just, like you said, it feels a bit clunky. And I think, I don't know if this is just a bug, but I was playing on Series X and the sensitivity on the aiming was ridiculous.
Right.
And it was like, I just touched the stick a little bit and then I was way off to looking all the way to the side and I was like, what is this? It feels like it hasn't been ported properly or something. Maybe that'll get patched or whatever. And that is the most minuscule thing. But it meant that my initial interactions with this game, alongside the fact that I thought the mission design and just what you were getting up to wasn't as immediately engaging as Sniper Elite 4, just felt quite clunky. And like I said, it feels like that original run of games across the 2000s that were on PC first and then came to console. Some of my favorite games of all time, like The Suffering and various games, the way the camera controls, it's, we hadn't hit that point, like you said, with the likes of Uncharted or the games that came out in the 2010s, where they felt like premium console games. It's sort of just like, you know, games that were built for PC and then brought across. It's a weird thing to describe, but I think if you play those games, you'll know what I mean.
Yeah.
And in Sniper Elite 5's case, it just had that, yeah, just like a level of, like, it's fighting me to enjoy it. Like, I'm moving my character, I'm trying to set up these different kills, but nothing's very fluid. And they've added things like you can sort of latch onto vines and get better vantage points, and you can sort of, you know, go and do a Sniper Elite. Like, it is the fifth main installment.
Yeah.
But I just was kind of just fighting it to just have fun, and I thought 4 was so fluid that this felt like a step back.
I think that's a great way to put it. I also felt like I was fighting, you know, the controls and the enemy layouts to kind of enjoy the game. Mm-hmm. I think the level design from the scant few areas that I've played is really good in terms of how broad it is, how many avenues you have to get to the objectives, and how many mini objectives are in those kind of open spaces as well. You know, you can overhear conversations to get some intel to go and do X, or find a satchel charge to go and do Y and stuff. And that was really cool. That made me more engaged in the actual moment-to-moment gameplay. But yeah, like you said, there was just that disconnect between me and the set of mechanics that I had. And also, I guess maybe I just over-egged it, because like I said, you know, I was going into this really thinking it was going to be my jam. I was like, yes. Like,
I was bigging up Sniper Elite 4 a lot, which I will still big up.
I was like, okay, these big open levels, you know, great stealth. And of course, it's a World War II tale, which I normally just lap up. But it does also the thing with its main character that Wolfenstein, the older games especially, try to do, where you're this kind of, you're this gruff, you know, archetypal Nazi-killing dude. And when we started doing that dialogue in this game as well, that also checked me out a little bit. I'm sure a lot of people would like that, but for me, it felt like Big J. Blazkowicz in a lot of ways.
That's really funny, is that I feel like they've struggled with how their tone should be across the franchise. Like, they started being super gritty, the original Sniper Elite, super realistic, and it was all about, like, you know, make sure you check in wind resistance and bullet drop and make sure you're nailing these headshots. And it was way about, you know, you weren't firing off the rifle as frequently as you are now. And then over time, they sort of got more over the top. The character that's in this one is the same dude that was in 4, and I think 3, but I could be wrong. It's Carl Fairbairn who was in 4. And so, yeah, they've kind of settled on this guy that is a bit more BJ adjacent, because you do have the over-the-top kills. You have all this gore that's going on, brains getting splattered, nads being shot off, and they've kind of, like, lent into that stuff. Like, the fact that you could shoot someone's bollocks was, like, a secret in Sniper Elite, I think it was in 2 or whatever, where people realized you could do that, whereas that's almost become the tone now. And, like, Sniper Elite 3, I think it was, had Charlie Brooker DLC, where he turned up as, like, Hitler was in there, and he was, like, Hitler's bodyguard, and, like... Channel 4's Charlie Brooker.
Insane.
Is in Sniper Elite DLC, and, like, so they've, you know, they've lent into that, and if you want to shoot Hitler in the bollocks, he's only got one ball, so they've got all that stuff, and it's kind of landed in this place where now it's like, let's do another Sniper Elite. They're trying to satisfy the old school fans, make it a bit more methodical, make it so you're picking your shots a bit more, but also try and keep the pace up and try and match where we were with 4. And for me, it just lands in a weird way. It's like, it's not saying it's not recommendable. I think if you like the franchise, you should check it out. It's just an interesting balance of, like I said, if you take it as an entire franchise, where they've landed now. I always loved all the stuff with wind resistance and bullet drop and nailing the headshots. But there's a very specific level layout that means that you're picking your shots in that way, which is one of the things that 3 got wrong, because it was all about activating like a car engine or a generator and then trying to hide your shot, and it just didn't really like line up very much because you're trying to like mask the sound of it and stuff. But yeah, it's interesting. It's on Xbox Game Pass at the minute, so that's how we both checked it out. But I feel like it's just being not talked about. Again, amongst all the conversation around people abandoning Game Pass, I was like, well, there is a AAA game right here, or there is a brand new game right here.
Yeah, totally. I didn't want to look into the reviews in too much depth to sway my opinion. opinion either way. But yeah, there were like so many 9s out of 10s that I saw. I know there were some 6 out of 10s as well. So it seems like a strangely divisive game, maybe because of what you were saying there with a lot of different Sniper Elite fans wanting maybe slightly different things. Yeah. Some wanting to go back to the classic style of gameplay.
And you can do that in the difficulty options, I should say that.
Yes, yeah, that is true, to be fair. I didn't know what to pick for those. I just went straight down the middle. Normally, yes. I would go more like wind resistance and what have you to get that kind of more authentic sniper experience, I guess. But yeah, I just kind of, I couldn't get away with it, man.
The thing is, we'll move on from this in a sec, but they have done a cool thing where other players can invade your game, and they've tried to bring in like that sort of dynamic Soulsian multiplayer where like you are sort of sneaking through somewhere and you can turn it off, but like, you know, someone else can invade your game and then you're dealing with them and you're all of a sudden thrown into what I loved in the, I think it's multiplayer in the original game, might have been into, but just having like sniper battles. Like it's like when you fight the end of Metal Gear Solid 3
right.
or Enemy at the Gates of the movie or whatever, where you're just looking for like the glints of someone's scope as you're both on opposite sides of a huge map and picking your shots. And like that can be really intense and really cool. And one of my favorite multiplayer memories is of Sniper Elite, like doing that, because that, especially if you turn up the difficulty, is all about like wind drop and you know, all that, all those, you know, how wind affects the bullet trajectory and everything. So when you finally nail that shot, it feels great. And they've tried to do a bit of that dynamically in 5, but obviously it depends on how active the player pool is, whether that's going to happen or whether it just messes up your stealth infiltration because right. you're in the middle of something and then someone comes in like Deathloop did. And so like, I think it's a hard balance, but the idea of, you know, pristine, like well regimented snipers going off against each other is a really cool thing.
Yeah, it's an interesting, like you said, especially in the multiplayer space, like that is really cool. Honestly, overall, it's just made me want to play Siphon Filter on the PlayStation Plus collection. Like, I don't
know
why.
With trophies, no less.
With trophies, no less. I don't know why I got such a Siphon Filter vibe from it. I think it was just kind of the archetypal gruffness of the character alongside with some of the animations. I was just kind of like, this reminds me of something else that I want to be playing on a different console right now.
We should very quickly dip into that stuff. What did you think of the way they've rolled those things out? Because a lot of the weekend was spent with you know, the PlayStation Plus premium service being shown off from Asian territories and showing like the features that the old games are going to have, like rewinding stuff and different save states. And I saw a lot of people, which are justifiable. If you grew up with the 60 frames a second version of these games, you'll be distraught to find that they're all the 50 frames a second versions. They're all the PAL ones.
Yeah.
But everyone in the UK like us is completely fine because we never knew any different.
That's it. And to be honest, right? I mean, unless you're like the diehard of the diehard. I don't know. This might be my ignorance speaking, but how much would you actually notice the difference, especially from your memory of these games? Because when I think about like Crash Bandicoot from back in the day, it is kind of jittery anyway. And I always upscale it in my brain. How does the reality of that actually mesh with my memory? I don't know.
The thing is, when I got the PlayStation Classic and I played Tekken 3, for me, that was perfect because that's the Tekken 3 that I remember. I know Tekken 2 is what's going to be on the premium service initially, but I did, or I do have Tekken 3 on my phone, which is like an emulated one, and that thing is in 60 FPS, and that is a huge difference. Like, it is like, oh my god, this just goes in a way that I didn't even realize.
Right.
So I get that if that's what you're accustomed to, that maybe it's akin to going from 60 frames to 30 frames and that feeling. But I guess we'll see if they're completely stable 30, then as I've come to realize, that's not too bad.
Yes.
I think the thing that is super noticeable that pulls you out of a game is when it's fluctuating between 25 and 30. That feels worse than just a steady 30.
Yeah.
But yeah, like in terms of the way that service is going down, I guess we'll find out more as the other territories open up. But
I think
it's interesting.
Yeah, totally. I don't know if we have talked about on any of our podcasts the lineup. Like the proper lineup that leaked from the Asian territories, you know, of PlayStation Plus games. I don't think so. I'm blanking on what we did last week, to be honest. Well, we did the PlayStation Plus one before then, but that was just the first slew of games. That wasn't everything.
We definitely haven't talked about Mr. Driller and Tekken 2.
We certainly have not. But all that stuff, like, I think it's good. Like, it's not a Game Pass beta, but it's a solid lineup, IMO, especially if you like the new games. Mm. And yes, they could do more with the upscaling, absolutely. But it's fine. And I know a lot of people will be disappointed with just fine. But for me, just fine is still good. It's still a net positive.
They have such a marketing optics problem where, like, they are not communicating any of this at all. Like, the fact that we had to pick up on what's out there from the Asian territories rather than them putting adverts out or a YouTube video or a walkthrough or anything is dumb as hell. Because I think what they're going to do, which is brilliant, is give these games their day in the sun across the coming months. Like, they'll do Soul Reaver, Tekken 3, whatever, and announce that on social media and do what Nintendo do. Like, you know, when they go, hey, by the way, Banjo-Kazooie's coming to the Switch online service, and they get that social media burst. I have to imagine that's their plan. But when they're they're not saying that, and they're just going, hey, give us more, because it's more expensive than Game Pass, give us more money for Mr. Driller in Tekken 2, that's ludicrous. And it's like, can you guys not just clarify what the hell's going to happen with this thing?
I know what you mean. There does need to be way more of a marketing push just in general. Like, I think Sony just generally actually just across the board, never mind
they're
PlayStation
terrible,
Plus,
isn't it?
Needs more of a bigger marketing push.
They do
push
a blog post,
games
and then
and what have you.
There's like a state of play that everyone gets wrong anyway.
Yeah.
And then Shuhei Yoshida's like, it's not going to be exclusives. And it's like, it's just going to be VR
and,
stuff.
And again, like, IMO, I keep saying that out loud. I need to stop
Emo.
It. That needs to be
Emo.
Retained to the DMs.
You do have Slam Dunk on the horizon. Maybe that's what it is.
I do have Slam Dunk on the horizon. I'm getting my pop punk hat on already, my friend. Nails painted.
Cool, got Heed and Cambria.
Shorts on there. What was I saying? PlayStation. Yes. I think it's fine. Like, I do think what they've announced and how they're announcing it is okay. But because it's PlayStation, you're expecting it to be, you know, far better
why wouldn't
than
they,
it is right now.
Yeah, why wouldn't they nail this? Yeah. Why are they just sitting back and, well, we've got a blog post and it's out in one of the territories, fill your boots. Like, I just think it's terrible. Like, I just, if I'm Mr. Sony, why am I not capitalizing on this?
Yes.
Like, you have the return of PlayStation games on a PS5 and you're barely talking about it.
Hopefully we see more over the next month. Hopefully.
Speaking of seeing more, and I can barely segue into this, but you returned to GTA Online over the weekend. And the string of messages I got for you, this is the most Nirvana-like Josh I've ever encountered. You were taken to another place.
I had an emotional, a genuinely emotional experience going back to GTA Online. I hadn't signed in on that thing since 2018.
Right.
And going back to it the upscaled PS5 version just made me realize how much a part of my life this game has been and how it has been with me for 9 years now. Like, I feel like I get about quite a bit, you know. I feel like I do a lot of social things in real life. So it makes it even more impressive to me that some of my life memories have been on GTA Online.
Right,
some of the best bonding moments with my friends have happened on this game. Like, you can chart the past 10 years of my life on this game, and it hits me like, you know, when you haven't heard a song in a long time instantly transported.
I played a Sonic game in a while.
I jumped into GTA Online and I was thinking, these are the streets I grew up on in a lot of ways. This is the apartment that I've been in for 10 years of my life. It's all virtual, but I just got this like feeling of returning home, and that sounds so lame in saccharine. But it was so real, and it made me emotional getting the radio back on, seeing the things that had changed, the radio stations and the songs that had come in, but then appreciating what was still there that I loved from the time.
And knowing how much you've done since then, like as a person. I genuinely think, I'd rather there be a term for this over time, but I feel like a lot of people, and me and us included, are having these sort of like returning to pre-COVID energies that they need a term for, because I had this with Sonic, and it's weird because I've had this a couple times. I had it once a few years ago where I listened to the Tekken Tag soundtrack and I flashed right back to like 2000 and getting my PS2, and I was like, man, I've come a long way in the last like 18 years or whatever it was. And then I had the same thing that you did with GTA, where I was after the Sonic 2 movie, I played the old Sonics, and I was like, man, it's been a while since like I went through Sonic 2, and I was like thinking about what it was like when I was a kid and like all that kind of stuff. And you have this sort of like come to Jesus moment, or whatever the hell you want to call it, where you're just like, no, life has happened.
Life has happened.
And like, it's a weird thing. Like, COVID really made you step back anyway and reassess like what your needs and wants and worths were. But when you go back to something now on the other side of it, having gone through all that stuff, there is a weird sort of like, man, I remember this, like,
absolutely,
style energy.
In GTA Online, for me, took that to another level, because obviously GTA Online is a living and breathing world. Like, that game didn't stop when I logged out of it. You know, that game has continued to evolve and change. So when I went back, it genuinely felt like revisiting my parents' house or going back to my hometown and walking through the streets and seeing, you know, the school I went to that's been knocked down and changed. You know, it's the same, but it's different. And it conjures up memories of the past. It makes you reflect on where you are now. And I was like, how has this happened in the span of 5 minutes? Like, it reminded me that these living and breathing live service games can be special when they're done right, to be honest. You know, so many of them are done wrong, but if they're a conduit for connection in a lot of ways, for that kind of community between either you and your friends or you and complete strangers, you create those memories, man. Yeah. It creates a sense of space and time that you belong to for a little bit, and revisiting that when you're older does the exact same thing to your brain that revisiting an older album does, or revisiting an older location, like I mentioned, with your hometown and stuff. It's mad.
Well, you're living in that space. I think that, because it's weird, every now and then, because I don't play Fortnite. I did when it first came out. Played it for like a year, whatever it was. That initial boom when everyone was playing it before it sort of fractured off. But I occasionally think, I look at the amount of events they're doing, all the weird shared things that they do, and I'll watch some YouTube videos of that stuff to try and keep up with it. The kids that are playing that, the teenagers, whoever are loving Fortnite, are going to have the best conversations like this in like 10 or 15 years time. Like, I already like think about what that'll be like for them. The next generation of gamers going, oh my god, remember when we did that shared thing when Thanos invaded our game or whatever it was?
Yep.
Like, those things are incredible. And like you said, it is interesting because we tend to, like, you know, romanticize and talk about nostalgia in terms of like old school games and things that we grew up with, whether it's Metal Gear Solid or Tekken or whatever. But there's a whole other thing for a game that like lived alongside you for a certain period. And I think that stuff's fascinating. Like when No Man's Sky came out, like I keep dipping into that. I've nearly always got it installed. And obviously they're updating it tons at the minute. But when that game came out, obviously the amount of planets that were in there, it was just sort of a go explore game. It's like a photography game. And I've always loved No Man's Sky. But one of the things that people were doing in there was, because you can name a planet and name all the flora and fauna that are on that planet, people were using that whole system to create like memorial planets to like loved ones and stuff. And like I'd made one of my grandparents a planet. I was like things that they're into and they loved, and I'd named the planet after them. And I was like, that's just off in the cosmos somewhere for someone else to land on and be like, oh, what's this name? And all these different things. And then I didn't play No Man's Sky for a few years. And after they did that, well, about a year, and they did that that big update that was like No Man's Sky Next. So I went back on and I had a similar thing where I was like, oh my God, like I lived here for a while. I named these planets. I made this base and I did all these different things. And so I think overall, like, we have this connection to nostalgia and set games with set release dates. But you're absolutely right that like something that can live alongside you has a whole other thing that we barely talk about.
That's it. It was just like something new and fresh because, you know, like some of the games you mentioned there, for me, Call of Duty was a big one, you know, Call of Duty Modern Warfare. So going back to that when the you couldn't get me off Warzone especially, but going to that when the actually remaster of the original Modern Warfare came out, you know, I was reliving my childhood through then. But like you said, it is different when it's something that exists when you're not there, and changes when you're not there. So you go back to it and it's kind of bittersweet. You remember the streets, but the streets are slightly different. You know, like I said, the radio is kind of slightly different. It has grown without you, and you have been off doing your own growing on your own without the game. So to come back and meet you up, it's kind of strange. But yeah, I had this feeling driving down the streets of GTA 5 Online, like this will end at some point. Like Online, this version of Anywhere, will definitively come to a close at some point, whether that's with the release of GTA 6 or sometime in the future. And I was just thinking about how great it was to have this time capsule for now that continues to exist. You know, I started university, the first week of my university life was when GTA 5 came out. And now I'm here 9 years later, you know, years and years into this job, and how much has changed through then? How many different friends have I been on GTA 5 with who I might not even talk to anymore? Have that memory. It was crazy, and I do think it is that kind of extra level of depth compared to your, you know, your Sonics or Modern Warfare and stuff, which obviously still have a lot of personal connection with. But this was, yeah, like I said, this added layer that I didn't even know was possible until I went back to it 3 years detached. Holy hell.
No, totally. The thing that I was describing was like, it was genuine, like, where was I in the moment? Where was I the first time I played this? But there's something else, like you said, about like live service stuff or just live multiplayer games. Like I, on the Master Chief Collection, like in 2014, going back to those Halo 2 maps and being like, man, it's been like 12 years since I, you know, went on whatever that one is with the big propeller in the middle of it. I feel like it's Stronghold or something.
The names, yeah.
Whatever that was called. And having that similar sort of thing. But yeah, like that's a whole sort of realm of gaming that needs to be fleshed out more, that live service stuff can be something more than just an abusive money hoover.
True.
That you actually get something out of.
It's funny because there's probably MMO fans, like World of Warcraft fans listening to this going, you idiot, we figured this out 20 years ago, but I didn't play those games. I'm having this epiphany for the first time.
All those Matrix Online players who went through, to be fair, you're one of the funniest, most hot, weirdly hot, whatever it is, insert emotion here videos. It's when they turned the Matrix Online servers off because everyone gathered on the same rooftop as the buildings were being deleted or whatever. And they're all just like standing there going like, well, we'll never see each other again. And then some guy's like screaming in the corner as they all get disconnected at once. It's like, that was the end of an MMO. But yeah, what did you think of the actual gameplay stuff? Did it hold up? Because it is still a 2013 game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to go back and play the story, I think, because I've not played that in even longer amount of time since I last hopped on online. But yeah, it held held up. It looked good. Like it I liked what they've added to this PS5 version. You know, obviously the HDR is very nice.
Shiny cars.
The shinier cars, the better frame rate and all of that jazz. So yeah, it's GTA 5. Like, it'll continue to live and be relevant. And I think that mechanically it holds up quite well for a game that came out on the Xbox 360.
It is ludicrous that you could have played that game on PS3 and then still play it on PS5 now. Speaking of revisiting stuff, I'm still in a Batman bubble. There's nothing else going on, so I'm just playing Batman stuff. I'm building the Lego Tumblr.
Yes.
I'm loving the Batman stuff. So I have played through all of Arkham Origins. I played through all of Arkham Asylum. I'm now on Arkham City. And speaking of revisiting stuff, I didn't like Arkham City at the time. And I think that there's a whole conversation in the Arkham fan base around whether Asylum is better than City, because Asylum is so much more focused. And I feel like now, directly comparing the two, it's interesting because I see both sides, and I think that I'm less reactionary as I was, because that was back when I was a student discovering Arkham City. And the thing with Arkham City, I see the criticism, and it's not that I don't agree with my older self. Like, Arkham City is if you took Asylum and then just detonated it, or if it was a plate and you dropped it and it was fractured, and it's like, that's all these focused parts of this game spread out over an open world. And if you want to have the more, if you want to have a continuation of Asylum, you need to find those locations and do those levels, but the in-between is not as engaging. And I largely stand by that. It's just that in this current Batman bubble that I'm in, I'm loving just being Batman and Gotham. And I think, divorced from that art direction, obviously when 2012 happened, and obviously Arkham City and then Arkham Origins and Arkham Knight, like, you can argue that it was oversaturated with the way the Arkham art direction came across. But it's been 7 years since Arkham Knight, and like, Gotham Knights isn't really wowing anyone, at least it didn't for me. And so when I went back to these Arkham games, I was like, I've missed this sort of really like decrepit neon soaked version of Gotham with a humongous moon.
Yes,
like the moon is like another moon. Like another planet coming in. Ridiculous. I've missed that stuff.
Is it the Asylum or is it the City box art where the moon is behind him and it's the biggest moon in
I think
the
that's Arkham
world.
Asylum, because Arkham City's box art is the worst box art of all time.
Is that like the
one with all the quotes on it?
Oh yeah, yeah, that's
game of the year unmissable. Whatever, terrible. But yeah, so I'm enjoying what City sort of brought to the table, even though I get why people would recommend Asylum as this tight thing.
Yeah.
But that's what we should talk about, though, because I feel like obviously the Arkham games have been talked to death. It's a very storied franchise and everything. Where did you come down on the Asylum versus City debate?
For the longest time, Scott Tilford, Arkham City was my favorite game of all time.
Right.
Like, I loved that thing when it came out. I have never been, you know, when you talk about Halo 3 and being buzzing for that launch, for me it was Arkham City.
Right.
I remember the Joker announcing it in that weird way where he's got like the script. I remember following the development. I was so hyped for this game, and it somehow didn't disappoint me personally. I liked what they expanded from Asylum. I liked the way they blew it out to a bigger open world. I liked the added mobility of Batman himself. I liked the added characters you could play as. I just thought it came together. However, in the years since then, I have come to appreciate Asylum more, especially for its weirdness. We had a brief chat about this before we started recording, and I'm eager to open it up to the floor.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, the version of Gotham in City is incredible.
Yeah.
But for me, it also started the move away from the weirdness that I liked in Asylum, you know, the more gothic approach to the aesthetic, and more tellingly, the supernatural kind of approach to the aesthetic. While Asylum was still more grounded, you had a bit more spookiness to it, I thought, you know, especially with Amadeus Arkham and the stuff with him. Mm-hmm. It just felt a little... It wasn't, you know, supernatural in the conventional sense, but it had this horror element to it that I think that they definitely got away with as the series became more sci-fi and tech-focused, which I never liked just from a pure aesthetic level. So I do appreciate Asylum for being that kind of weird one, where you have this weird bat suit, and you have the big moon, and you have all of this stuff, you know? City still retains some of that for me, but... I thought Asylum was full on with it.
Oh, see, it's funny, right? One of the things that I realized going through Asylum is that, one, it's incredibly short. Like, in my head, when I played through that in 2009, obviously I was a much younger man, maybe it's just because I stretched it out over a few months. I did get all the Riddler trophies and everything else, but I thought that game was like a 15 to 20 hour game. It's not, it's like six, if not less. And you can really burn through it. Like, the only thing that really elongates it is if you want to do the Riddler stuff, which I would obviously recommend. Those Riddler challenges are fun enough. But it's interesting what you said there about like the horror side of it, because it's, for me, that didn't really come through that much. There is the tale of Amadeus Arkham, the founder of Arkham, that you can scan in a bunch of like collectibles and get the story of him, and you can find all the interview tapes of the various inmates of Arkham being interviewed and everything.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's just the thing that I would sort of just like add to that is just a general level of atmospheric, like, you know, you're sort of isolated. Like, it is almost a horror setup. Like, Batman is struggling to survive, which is why I love, and I still think it's one of the best scenes in gaming history, the reveal of the Batcave.
Yes.
When he just literally just, or he just says, I need to analyze some samples to find Joker or whatever it is. I'm just going to do it at the Batcave. And then Oracle's like, what do you mean? And he's like, well, I've got one under the island. So you never know. I need to be prepared. And I was like, that's so good. Like, you get it over on us as the audience, because we're like, you're one of the biggest problems that gaming has is letting the player be a human, a character that thinks better than them. Like, how do you possibly play Sherlock? Because you as a player are dumber than Sherlock, and it's always those moments. And so Batman, it was like, oh, I've got a Batcave, and you as the audience were like, oh my God, as Oracle is like, that's insane. And then Batman's just like, nah, it's fine. I'm Batman. I've got this. It's good. And just figures it all out, and just he's one step ahead of you, even though you're playing as him. And I think that they walk that line so perfectly, especially with the combat. But yeah, the Asylum thing for me, like, it is this, it almost feels like a side story in the grand, like, string of Arkham titles, especially if you factor in Origins, because it's like, well, canon-wise, you now had this big title, this big open space that became a little side story where he got trapped on Arkham Asylum, which then became back out to being the city stuff again, and there was a Batmobile. So, like, it's interesting being recontextualized in that way. But yeah, I enjoyed my time with it, but I found myself just kind of, like, loving how expansive Arkham City feels. Yeah, I guess the thing that you would love about it as well. But there is open world stuff trickling in, like, go find the 5 canisters with Bane and go do all the random crimes and do the, oh my God, I'll stop talking, but the aerial grapnel upgrade stuff,
yeah,
where you've got to like swing and dive and fly through.
Scott.
The first one's all right, but the advanced one where you've got to dip through that really tiny little tunnel to get like an upgrade.
I used to love that, man. It's been a long time since I've gone back to City to do that stuff immediately, because I played it to death when it first came out. Played that replayed that game so many times, mm-hmm. but I still love the mobility of Batman, you know, being able to dip and dive and duck and dodge.
Oh, no, I do as a statement, yes.
Okay.
But asking me to go through specific rings and duck in a very specific way, I hated it in the Ra's al Ghul fight, that bit, which I knew would be the thing you loved the most. I think young me didn't bother with the Wayne Tech upgrades that much. I got the first grapnel upgrade. I didn't do the other ones. And then, because I remember having to really get used to the dip and dive thing when I was doing the Ra's fight. And, like, obviously that's a fundamental mechanic that they really layer on in Arkham Knight, which retroactively it is in there in City. It's just that you need to unlock more of it. So, like, that side of it is interesting. But yeah, it's just, it's weird in terms of storytelling as well, because if you take all of it as one big timeline, Harley Quinn's character barely makes any sense, because at the end of Origins, she's still Harley Quinzel. She's still Harleen Quinzel. She's not, like, full absolute maniac that she is in Asylum. And then there's some lines of dialogue in this that have aged horribly. There's there's a joke that Joker makes about the fact that you've defeated Harley Quinn in a boss fight, and he's like, "Oh, slapping her around, that's my job." But I'm like, "All right, Joker, mate." Like, we just sidestepped that back in 2009. But like, okay, and but yeah, overall, I think I would recommend going back to the Arkham series. I think that if you take them as one big canonized thing, as much as Rocksteady have discarded Arkham Origins, it does work overall. Batman in Arkham Origins discovering a heart, realizing he can't do this by himself, is very good, and obviously plays off how things end up in City, and then eventually Knight and whatever. So I would still recommend it, but
You going to replay Knight?
Oh, hell yeah, I've got them all downloaded.
Excellent.
I've rebought the Return to Arkham stuff, which has all the DLC and everything, so I'm going to rinse City, and I guess I'll see how Arkhamed out I am after that, but I'm just loving the Batman.
The thing that I love about City, and especially Knight, to be fair, while you do have the open world fluff of, you know, take out these towers, you know, do five things, it does have some really great nuggets of open world content in there that you just stumble across. Mm. Like, I remember the first time, you know, you stumble across your first crime scene in City or whatever, or you're on the hunt for a serial killer and stuff.
Or Zaz gives you a ring.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's when you get Man-Bat, of course, in Knight, you know,
you
get that big scare. Mm-hmm. Like, all those little threads are threaded so well into that world that it feels natural. And I'm like, I want that to return in some way. I loved those surprises, because if there's anything that franchise got right for me, it was the sense of discovery. It was the sense of surprise that you didn't know how the world was going to change or what was going to be around any corner. Mm-hmm. And I just thought Rocksteady did such a good job with that construction.
Yeah, one of the hands that they play, which didn't work for me back in 2012, was the way that they put Hush in the game. And it's like some of the discoverability stuff, like you said, there's no way to find that, like, unless you stumble upon it. And I remember having that realization back in 2012. I said maybe it was 2011 for this game, whatever. It was early 2010s.
Yeah.
And I remember hating that, because I was like, I love Hush as a character. Hush, the Batman book, is like one of my favorite stories. And, like, I love how twisted that character is. Like, give me dark, twisted Gotham any day of the week. And so I remember just being very gutted and annoyed that I couldn't find my favorite character in the game. I was just like, he's somewhere in this space, and I can't just walk every single street until I find him. Like, that's not what I'm going to do. Give me some way to do this. But I understand that the hand that they played was that if you happen to stumble upon him, that was one of the most rewarding parts of that game.
Absolutely. The closest thing that it reminds me of that's come out recently was, you know, in Red Dead Redemption 2, when you stumbled across the serial killer who had, strung people up. And there was,
or
like,
the
limbs.
Vampire.
Yeah, or the vampire or whatever. I remember being in Red Dead 2 and kind of seeing, like, a blood trail and being like, what is this? And following it and getting onto this quest. Mm-hmm. It was the same with Arkham for me. So when I did, you know, discover that this was a Hush story, I was thinking, bloody hell, who is Hush? But then after I figured out who Hush was and read the comics, I was like, this is awesome. This is really good.
that is a very specific hand for them to play that I guess, like you said, in Knight, they just throw the Man-Bat reveal right in your face. Like, make sure you get this. But yeah, overall as well, and this is just overthinking AF, but Arkham City as a prospect, as a concept, makes no sense.
Oh, no.
Not at all. No. Like, I mean, this time around in Arkham Asylum, I knew about the hidden wall to go find Warden Sharp's plans for extending Arkham Asylum into part of Gotham, which I get is the political rally at the start of Arkham City with Bruce Wayne himself going like, this is ridiculous, all the murderers are just right there. But then we cut to Hugo Strange having kidnapped Bruce, and we don't really connect that tissue of how that all got approved or whatever in the first place.
Doesn't make any sense.
No.
And I will also say, in my opinion, mm-hmm. all-time worst Bruce Wayne design. I hate that dude.
Oh, he looks like a weird sort of like Neanderthal man.
He kind of
does. He's very like squared off.
Yeah, I don't.
Like a Minecraft man.
I don't trust that man. He doesn't even look like the guy under the suit. And I'm like, who is this dude?
I remember thinking it's in Arkham Knight when he gets all solemn towards the end of that game and he's taking the mask off. And I was like, who are you? Like, we're an ape man, like Planet of the Bruces at this stage. But like, yeah, I know what you mean. I think they could do a lot better in terms of maximizing the chin as opposed to making him look like a squared off man. But you also played Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, which, well, I think you played a little bit of it.
I did.
A little bit of it. Because Jedi Fallen Survivor?
Jedi Survivor.
There's the sequel. Jedi Fallen Order got announced at Star Wars Celebration. So I think, was that your main catalyst?
It was, my friend. Unsurprisingly, had a big Star Wars weekend. Mm. Even went to a food event called Slice Wars, where people had Star Wars themed pizza.
That's very
on
good.
Sale. I got some good ones. I can't remember any of the pun titles. I'm really
disappointed. I did see Battersea Power Station fight up its old chimneys to be red and blue.
What was this? Who did that?
Battersea Power Station.
Battersea?
Nowhere near us, but I saw a picture of it.
I was thinking that. That's like in London, right?
Assumedly, there was a... I probably know where it is, but it's Battersea Power Station. There was a. There was some Jedi hilts, lightsaber hilts, projected onto each chimney, and then one of them was blue and one of them was red coming out the top.
Well, there we go. It was a very Star Wars heavy day. Obviously, Obi-Wan came out, the celebration, like you said. Uh-huh. I watched Obi-Wan, so I was like, I'm in a Star Wars mood.
Is it good?
It's all right.
That's good.
Yeah, it's all right. It's good. It's good for what it is. I'm excited to watch more.
Maybe that's all it needs to be, I don't know.
Maybe that's all it needs to be. But yeah, I wanted to go back to Fallen Order anyway, mm-hmm. because it has a very Dark Souls-inspired combat, mm. and like, you know, I've been on a From Software binge for this year, so
I thought you were free of it.
I thought so too, my friend, but now I'm playing Jedi Fallen Order, so the planets aligned, playing the PS5 version, and man, I forgot how good this game starts. I remember being surprised and shocked about it back when it first came out, and I do think the way this game kicks off, like, I want to put it in every list ever. I think it just makes such a good first impression with the first level in the story hook. It just goes, man. Like, it slows down a little bit after that, but the first level, the way you're introduced to Cal, I think is, like, up there with Dead Space 2.
Okay, that's fair. I like the music that's in there. I forget the name. I think the band's called The Who. Like, they're the ones that they start getting in to do. They're the band that plays when you go to the arena later on.
Ah, yes.
And they're also in the Obi-Wan trailer and stuff. I'm assuming that they must just be in a lot of Star Wars movie or TV stuff now, because they're sort of just become the band of Tatooine or wherever it is. But yeah, I like the thing that Respawn do in a lot of their games where they change the world behind you without you realizing.
Yeah.
And then you turn around and you're somewhere else. And they do that a couple of times in the intro where Cal's remembering his training or remembering his teacher and everything. I thought the opening was like kind of cool, like the scene setting of it. It obviously looks gorgeous, especially on the PS5 version or the next gen version. But it's weird. Jedi Fallen Order for me overall, I didn't think hit its stride till right near the end when they give you enough powers to actually have fun with it. And I get it's because it's an origin story and Cal's getting used to everything. But there's a run at the end where you storm that final base and you're like, you have all the powers. So you're like grabbing a stormtrooper, throwing another one, impaling another guy with your lightsaber, and it just works. And I get that that's the payoff. But that final run is where I was like, man, I wish this was the rest of the game. I wish there was like a new game plus, which maybe there is now, but I don't think there was.
There is, but you don't retain the skills.
Right, okay. Like, I guess it would break everything because some of them are like traversal and stuff. But yeah, I'm hoping that that's what they do with Survivor. They just take where you were, end it off, and then go from there. Because the trailer shows who looks to be a new character.
Yes.
Looking very Dragon Ball. Very big hair. Dragon Super Saiyan.
Mm-hmm. What I want. Which I dig, my friend. I know you certainly dig. But yeah, I want them to just... It immediately pick up with the power set that you had here. I don't want a God of War gimmick where you lose your powers or whatever and you have to get reset. Like, just let us play with that set of mechanics that you perfected, because this combat system to me is so satisfying. Like, the controls can be a little clunky, but like you said, when it works, it is so tactile and so cool to just like deflect back these blaster shots and stuff, or to chain these different force moves into combos that just slice through people. Like, when it is in the flow, it is awesome. It's just that flow sometimes breaks, I think, a little bit. I think it's a really good 8 out of 10 game, and I hope the sequel like pushes that up to like 9.
Yeah, that's, funnily enough, I'm just remembering, because when you said the intro bit, I was thinking of the mining planet stuff, like when you're on the train and everything, or the mining train. But there is that whole train sequence where you're like killing stormtroopers, jumping between carriages. That's when it really takes off, I guess, and they show off a lot more of what they've made.
It's like straight out of Uncharted or something. It is so visually interesting. Like, the lighting, especially in the PS5 version, is so dynamic.
In the rain as well.
Yeah, in the rain.
Give me lightsabers in the rain.
Oh, it's so
all good. The time.
The way, whoever decided to use the lightsaber as an actual light source in this game deserves a raise. I wish I thought of that. I would have been satisfied for my entire life, because it's such a cool utility to use this cool way to use this weapon. weapon as a utility. Mm-hmm. And I think that's neat. I just think lightsabers are neat.
The lightsabers are neat. I think that, lightsabers in the rain fighting dudes on top of a train, whilst if you stand still, you can hear the pitter-patter of the rain fizzle off the lightsaber. I was this is sick.
So annoyed you didn't rhyme that second couplet there.
What could I have?
The first one rhymes, and I was like, you're about to drop the best rap bar I've ever heard on a podcast.
If my memory wasn't the mental age of an 80-year-old man, I would remember the past sentence that I said. But I can't remember it, so I'm going to move on. We should end on the string of adaptations that Sony have announced. Two TV shows, one movie. Horizon's getting a TV show. God of War's getting a TV show. And Gran Turismo's getting a movie with Neil Blomkamp, no less, in talks to direct. Neil Blomkamp being of Elysium fame, of District 9 fame, of the other thing he did that was horrendous. Chappie. The worst film I've ever seen. One of the worst, not Doctor Strange, but one of the worst films that I've ever seen. And what do you think of this stuff? Because I think we're split on which parts of this we're excited about.
I think we are, because I think that Gran Turismo project sounds like the most unhinged thing in the entire world. Like getting Neil Blomkamp, especially to direct it. Like I had to check that it wasn't one of those fake film news Twitter accounts the weekend tweeting that out. I was like, this can't be real. And it was real.
The thing is, I am only excited for the Gran Turismo movie because that's the only one that can do something new. Like, we've never had a story mode in a Gran Turismo. We've never had narrativized Gran Turismo. And I don't think there are that many elements of Gran Turismo to narrativize. But I will take some sort of story around racers who then go and do a cool high stakes, around the Laguna Seca track race.
I mean, listen, it might work, but I remember Aaron Paul's Need for Speed, which didn't work. But
see, also Fast and the Furious.
But here's the thing.
Go
Fast
on.
And the Furious, great, mad fun.
Uh-huh.
That's like the antithesis of Gran Turismo, which is like your grandfather's tea room game.
Do you know what was brilliant? Ford versus Ferrari.
That was brilliant.
That's how you brilliant. Do it.
Yeah, if you do like that, or like Rush or something, get some... Well, I know it's not as good as Ford versus Ferrari, but I'm that way.
There's ways to do a driving movie. The thing, my core thing is, since I have The Last of Us, I'm like Carl Pilkington. I look at it and I go, do I need that? Do I need it? Do we need it? Like, do we need a Horizon TV show? The CG is going to be terrible. I don't believe that they'll nail it at all. Halo looks horrendous.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way that they get this right.
You know, I'm always way more positive than you when it comes to any of these
in
live
life.
Action.
Yeah.
I don't think that's true. You're way more positive than I am. You're always
We trade. Day
we
by
trade.
Day.
But you're fully right. You can look at it and go, why do I need this when the original has such good storytelling, has such good presentation, direction, all of that jazz. But to me, I'm like, why not? Well, I'll take it. I'll see what they do. If they do something interesting, cool. If they do something uninteresting, it doesn't take anything away.
No, I don't know. I look at these, anything you're adapting that has a cinematic footprint, I don't see the point of. If it's, and that's, we've talked about this before, but like my whole thing about like video games can be the mecca of everything, whether it's architecture, script writing, cinematography, whatever. You can do all those things in game form all in one. So why would you pick one element of that and do a worse version of the original whole? Like, that's always going to be my thought. And so, like, you're always, and everyone's just going to be like, whoever gets cast, oh, it's not as good as Ashley Birch. Like, it's just going to be that. And, like, the CG, you're not going to nail it. It's not going to look natural unless you build all the robots, which I doubt you will. You're not going to build a big old T-Rex that's as big as it needs to be. It's got a big uphill battle. And God of War, how the hell do you cast Kratos?
That is true. I have no
idea. Unless you get Triple H, who already looks like
him. We're not getting Triple H. We're not getting Triple H, man.
We're not getting Triple H, right?
We've had
every single thing you bring up, we're not getting Triple H.
You can have whatever else you want, but we're not getting Triple H.
We're getting Triple H. I don't know how the hell you cast Kratos, because assumedly you would get a Greek actor, but like obviously his origin story is so messed up anyway, unless you literally do have the ashes of his dead family, which is why he's like a white guy.
Well,
I don't know.
This is literally the thing. I have no idea what they're going to do with any of these adaptations, which is kind of why I'm excited. I don't know what they're going to do with Horizon. Do they just follow the game story with Aloy? I have no idea what they're going to do with Gran Turismo. Do they invent some kind of story? Do they take it away from its cozy origins? And again, God of War, which game do you follow? Presumably the 2018 version, but how the hell do you...
It'll be that. It'll be the sad dad one. Yeah.
Then how the hell do you film that? How the hell do you adapt that into a story that is satisfying as a kind of a movie or whatever?
Well, I feel like it's really interesting because I, as an overall approach to a mythos, I like what Uncharted did and I like what Halo did. I'm not saying the execution was very good,
right?
But I like the idea of taking elements of a mythos, and ostensibly, I think I've said this to you, maybe on a podcast, as well. But take those elements and just spread them out metaphorically across a table and then pick whatever you want to link to whatever else you want. If it still feels like that franchise or you're having fun with it, then it can work. And Halo and Uncharted had that from the beginning, but obviously Halo's results were all over the place. Uncharted, I thought, did it quite well. Like, all of a sudden, this person isn't this person's brother or whatever it is, and that can still be interesting. And maybe that's what they do with Horizon and God of War. I think that with Horizon, they'll make it a mystery show, same as they did. They've kind of forced Halo to be a mystery show where no one knows what a Halo is.
Right.
And that's the whole thing with that show, is trying to figure out what a Halo is. And I think they'll do that in Horizon. It'll be like, what are the mysteries of this world and why are we all like this and whatever. And they'll mimic the first game, I would assume. God of War, I guess you do the sad dad stuff. You cast Atreus, you cast Kratos, and just do their bonding thing. That's the arc.
Yeah.
But we've seen it. So, like, for Gran Turismo, the fact that they have to pull from just a bunch of cars is immediately more interesting because I'm more curious as to what the hell that is.
See, this is the wind-up because you're talking... you're making very valid points, but you're talking to someone who's, like, most anticipated show for the past 10 years
yes.
is The Last of Us HBO show coming out next year. So it's like, I'm the... Whatever you just said... Imagine I said the exact opposite of it, because that's what I'm looking forward to.
I wish
see how
I had
these things.
Whatever it is in me that could get excited for the passive entertainment version of the active medium.
Right.
Like, that's the thing, because I'm just like, I'm going to have to just sit and watch the thing that I would love to play. Like you said with Sniper Elite, it just made you want to play Siphon Filter. Right. And there was something else that we talked about that just made you want to play something. And that's always my thing. That's why I'm playing so much Batman stuff, because I listen to Batman Unburied. Sonic as well. I'll watch the passive thing and I'll play the active thing. Like,
right.
Active trumps passive in every possible way, at least for me. Yeah. So that's always going to be the cool thing.
Yeah, totally. I guess when I just get in one of these moods, I'm in a mood right now with Star Wars. I'm in a mood right now with zombies again because I'm reading a book on how Shaun of the Dead was made. So when I'm in one of those moods, I want everything around it. I'm greedy and I'm insatiable. So I want the TV version. I want the movie version. I want the game version.
It's very fair. And that's obviously more sane than the madness that is me watching a movie with a guitar in my hands. Because I can't not do something with my hands. We talked about this in the office the other day about how I can't just watch something. The only time that I'll sit and watch something is in the cinema. And even then I'm scratting around with aero pockets, Maltesers, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like, because you can just watch a movie like a human, like most people do.
I get the fidgety thing, but yeah. I think, you know, it's obviously fine to, you know, do whatever you want during watching a movie, but you busting out like a Metallica riff while you're trying to listen to like
it's
Mad
not plugged
Men,
in.
You know what I mean?
It's not plugged in.
I don't know what that, it makes noise though, surely
A little bit of the twangs.
If I lived with you and you were playing the guitar while I was trying to watch Better Call Saul.
I wouldn't, I wouldn't do it during Better Call Saul, and I wouldn't do it during, if anyone else was in the room with me.
Okay,
If it's just me watching stuff, if it's just my personal thing of passive versus active, I will make the passive an active thing by putting something in the old hands.
I like that.
So
like
I'm not just watching it. But yeah, Christ knows when these things are going to be coming out. They've all just been announced by Sony, but we'll have to wait and see.
As a final note before you wrap up, I do think it's interesting that they're giving them to a bunch of different studios rather than putting all of their eggs in one basket. Like, I know one is being made by Netflix. One's an Amazon Prime thing. One is presumably...
I think Horizon is Netflix, God of War's Prime.
There we go.
And then Gran Turismo is a movie by their own studio.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is quite a cool way to do it. It's like they're not betting at all on Netflix and then having that fall apart. It's like, right, we're going to, hopefully, this is how they're doing it. I don't know, maybe this is just me projecting, but hopefully they're like, let's shop this around and the best pitch wins. Like, the best person for the job gets characters.
No, this is by far the best way to do it. I mean, Netflix have a signature style. Like, they have a very specific, like, amount of literal lenses they give creators, all color grading or whatever it is. And then Amazon have started to sort of differentiate. Apple TV started to differentiate, but, like, they still have certain signature looks. So it's quite interesting in that regard, being like, let's take what is a PlayStation look or a certain color palette or whatever, and then give it to these signature studios what the hell's the word for the collection of studios that Netflix operates? A workhouse of
production company.
That's the term that I wanted. Giving it to them and going, how do you guys reinterpret this? Are you going to recolor grade all the Horizon stuff so that, like, I don't know, to make Aloy's hair pop or whatever the hell you do with that stuff? That note, though, who do you think you're going to cast as Aloy?
That's a great good.
And my gut feeling is literally Rose Leslie from Game of Thrones. And I know that's because she also stated in an interview that she cited Aloy as like someone that she was inspired by or something.
Right.
And so I know that she looks a hell of a lot like Aloy. And she's because she was one of the dudes in Game of Thrones that lived in the north.
Yes.
That she's used to wearing that kind of clothing. Maybe that would work.
I think that's a great visual comparison.
Yes.
However, you might not like this. I'd go for Florence Pugh, Scott Tilford.
Oh, I adore Florence Pugh.
With a wig, but I think she's got that kind of... You know, kind of like,
she's got the fire.
She's got the fire. She's got like the fresh-faced fire and confidence that I think Aloy brings to the table.
Yeah.
I think it could work.
Yeah, give that IP to Florence Pugh. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I recant my very suggestion. Florence Pugh should absolutely be Aloy. And for now, this has been The Wind-Up. Hopefully, whatever I say to wrap this show up, and I've been Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Whatever I say to say goodbye. Always a pleasure, Scott Tilford.
Yes, I say always a pleasure to be heard by all of you, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye-bye. Goodbye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.